Hello and welcome to Verbatim. I'm Nicole Steinke. Today we're talking with Bill Skinner, a nonconformist with an opinion on everything, a wanderer, a laborer, and a man obsessed with wheels of all kinds. Even as we spoke, he was sometimes watching a little mouse in its cage, running on its wheel. Bill Skinner's forded rivers in trucks, crossed immense deserts in a tiny Citroen, and ridden just about everywhere in Australia on his bicycle. He usually camps with his dogs on these adventures. Bill Skinner.
I've ridden from Yarragon to Cairns on a pushbike, and I used to ride over to Adelaide quite often to see German relatives over there. And they're all dead now, because I'm nearly 92 myself now. I used to ride from Yarragon to Princes Bridge in 3¾ hours.
How far is that?
72 miles. What's that in?
That's pretty slow.
Must have been. There's no bitumen. It's great junks of metal sticking up out of the road, and you had to have special tyres to be able to withstand it. The roads were so crook then, sometimes if you're on long trip, you'd have to carry another wheel. You'd even break the wheel too. So that's why the times were slow. But would it be 70 years ago, I used to ride my bike from our farm in Yarragon down to the Prince's Highway to see Hubert Offerman and Fatty Lamb, the greatest bike riders in the world, racing from Bairnsdale to Melbourne. Hubert Offerman's monument is still up at Rochester, where he was born. And Fatty Lamb was the greatest sprint rider we ever had. He could beat Oppie on the track, but not from Bairnsdale to Melbourne. Oppie used to always win.
What year would this have been?
Oh, don't ask me that. 70 years ago.
What was the road then like from Bairnsdale to Melbourne?
Metal, no bitumen. It was quite a feat to get there on a bike. But there were cars in those days too. When I was 10 years old, I used to steal our old Overland utility out of the shed at home when my father was away. I used to get some terrible hidings off him and drive the Overland all over the farm. By the time I was 18, I was an accomplished driver.
When did you make your first trip north?
Oh, that would be early in 1930. Chap now, I don't know whether you're still alive. Les Reed and I, we rode up to Queensland together.
On your pushbike?
Yeah. You won't believe this. In those days, we used to stay at a hotel. Do you know what the top price was to stay at night in a hotel? 2 and 6. And, of course, the only way you get the money is go out and dig potatoes, because you couldn't make anything on the farm. They were starvation farms in those days, 1920s and 1930s.
Bill Skinner says he's been to Cairns more times than he can remember, not always by bicycle. He was working there when the Second World War broke out.
Well, I used to drive big Ford tip trucks, and there were 70 trucks on the job, and I drove for 5 years from Edge Hill, that was 2 miles away from the aerodrome, backwards and forwards. Of course, the war came. When I was 28, they took me off my trucks, put old men, and they both smashed my trucks up. Never got any compensation at all. So when I got leave from the army, I came down and got on the farm. And a farmer does twice as much for the war effort than a soldier does, so they never took me back into the army. And I think I would have committed suicide if they'd have taken me back as a soldier. I was walking down from Edge Hill in the army one day, the sergeant major walking right alongside of me with a baton, 500 he was looking after. A dog or something shot in the front of the battalion, and everyone went like this, looking at the dog. I did too. And this fella brought the baton down over me and flattened me onto the ground. And from that day on, I hated everything to do with armies. So I would never be a soldier again. Cut sugar cane for years and years. If there was any poisonous snake here, I could go and pick it up for you. Handle any snake you can think of. But one big python got hold of me one day and quick and lively wrapped himself around me, and when he got up to my neck, I had to put my hands up like this to stop being strangled. And although there were 10 cane cutters in the gang, there was only one bloke game to get that python off me. And he come and unwind it away from me, otherwise it would have killed me. I couldn't get away from it.
What sort of people used to work on the cane fields then?
Tough people. Very tough. You wouldn't get them tougher anywhere. The python was wrapped round a stool of cane, and as you came along cutting it, and you see this huge thing, like several motor tyres, wrapped around, and the farmer used to call out, "Do not kill that python. It gets the rats in the cane. See? You are sacked if you kill that python." See? They used to love them. And when the cane season was over, I used to hop in a little Morris Minor car and drive out to Western Queensland, right where that green mark is up there in the map, and ringbark timber. They used to cut half the handle off the axe, and you'd stand alongside the tree, whack it, pull it out, pull the bark out, take one step around and do the other half of the tree. And if you didn't do it that way, I had a mate called Bob Johnson, killed in the war. He went out with me. He would not learn the correct way to do it, so they sacked him. So he went back to Melbourne and a wife. So is there anything worse than that?
You must have married at some stage.
I never married in my life.
92 years and you've managed not to marry.
I had a lot of nice girlfriends and I made a mistake once. That daughter will be 50 years old on the 17th of next month, and I have always looked after her. Of course, my mother brought her up. Her mother died 3 weeks ago. She was a drinker and a smoker, but quite a nice girl, but not nice enough to marry.
Did she want to marry you?
Yeah, but I've never been the marrying type. I used to see the unhappiness that was around the countryside between married people, and that's one reason why I never took it on, especially at home. The way my mother used to have to slave on that dairy farm, I thought it's just not right. And she brought up 8 kids, and the 8 of them are still alive. None under 80 years of age. And the brother is 93. I'll be 92 on the 17th of September. All still alive.
Did you work in the big timber areas?
Yeah, I used to cart logs from Mowi. In the biggest shed they used to make, big shed truck, sometimes I'd only have one log on the load. That's how big it is. 10,000 super feet, if you know what that means. Just one log, and take it all the way to Melbourne. And I did that for years and years. But do you know what? I've found out in my life that a truck driver knows where there's a potential accident going to happen in front of him, where a car driver doesn't know. So when you've been driving trucks for that long... Now, I shouldn't skite about this, but I have never had an accident in my life. I'll touch wood. I drive an undersized car now, a little two-cylinder Daihatsu. It couldn't race anything on the road. I get off the road. I even stop to let the traffic pass. I never hold anybody up.
You've made a number of trips north, haven't you?
Oh, dozens.
I saw a photo earlier, it looked like a pretty old one, of you and a car that seemed to be floating across a river.
I've still got the truck in the yard. It hasn't moved for 10 years, an international. I drove it right up to see the peak on the top of that map.
Very top of Cape
York. No bridges up there, had to go over, the water's up to here, up to my neck. And one day the water got in the carburetor And there was a mechanic I'd made a friend of on the other side of the Jardine River, which is 600 metres wide. Can you imagine that? Anyway, there was one place where the trucks could go over as long as it was not over your head, you know. The diesel trucks would go over easily because they had to pipe up over the bonnet, and that saved them. Yeah, that would go over deep water, but mine wouldn't. Anyway, I had to cross this blessed river, and I just crawled out on the bank on the other side, and there's a 2-ton crocodile following me. On the other side. Anyway, he just stayed there on the bank. If I had a gun, I would have shot. I would shoot it now. I don't believe in crocodiles.
So you've travelled a fair bit in pursuit of work.
Yep. Yeah, worked in Darwin for weeks and weeks on the shovel, shovelling up there.
What were you shovelling?
Oh, muck, you know, to fill in crevices here and there all over Darwin. And a lot of it. I bought 4 acres in Cairns for $40. You wouldn't buy it for $40,000 now. And I did something you weren't allowed to do. Everyone was carting sand, and my place was full of sand, so I made a pit in my place. And by the time I left there, I had a great big pit where I'd shoveled the sand out.
So you created your own sand mine on your own property?
Yeah, saved a lot of money.
Where else have you moved for work?
Well, I worked over in Perth there at a sawmill called Nyamuck. That's a big sawmill. I drove this little 2CV Citroen right around Australia, and I went into the Perth place where they get jobs, what do you call that? And he said, "You Victorians, what are you coming over here trying to take our jobs for?" I said, "Well, look, just give me an address of somebody that might give me a job." And he said, "Well, it's a long way from Perth, Nyamuck." He said, "But that chap wants somebody down there." So I went down, got the job straight away. And this is something you mightn't believe. I left there because they were breaking into my hut, these other blokes working at the mill. And I thought, well, they're going to take everything I got there. So I set off on a wet morning, no sign of the sun, and travelled in this timber country for 100 miles. Do you know where I landed up at night time? Nyamuck. Then I drove it up further. I got little bits of jobs here and there. There were two blokes talked me into giving them a ride in the Citroen. So you can imagine, with a tiny car like that, I had my luggage in it and the tools and everything. So we put them onto one of those old boats that used to travel from Darwin to Perth, thinking we'd get them in a couple of weeks up in Darwin. Took 3 months for that ship to arrive. One of these blokes I never liked from the time I first saw him, but the other fellow he was with I did like, Bert. Bert and Joe, you're still alive? Anyway, I got on well with Bert, but not with Joe. Joe used to sit in the back seat of the Citroen with my gun to the back of my head, you know, he's going to shoot me. Yeah, I used to see him there, and I said, "Keep that gun away from my head, will you please, Joe?" Anyway, we got to Darwin eventually. And the policeman got onto him straight away. And he got onto me. He said, "Don't you know that fella?" I said, "Well, I'm fed up of him. I've had him in the car for 3 months. He said, he was in 12 years in the Kalgoorlie jail for murder. So I said, "Well, he tried to murder me, but he didn't get away." But this Joe used to taunt me all the way from Broome to Darwin by saying, "Why do you sleep in your car at night? Why don't you sleep out in the open like Bert?" And I said, "It's more comfortable in the car, Joe. Otherwise I wouldn't be here now, for sure."
You're listening to Verbatim and the Venturesome Bill Skinner here on Radio National. At almost 92, Bill's still a bit of a travelling man.
I head off from Darwin Anyway, there was a big write-up in the Melbourne Age about this tiny little 2CV Citroën going right around Australia.
Crazy. So you've always been a person who liked to do unusual trips.
Yeah. Anything unusual I would do. Sometimes it cost me plenty. Other times I'd have a great time. But I used to love living out in the bush on my own. You know, right away, just as long as I had dogs, I was happy. I've still got dogs out there now.
What sort of dogs?
Well, Monji. Where are you, Monji? Rusty. They're here somewhere. Two tiny little dogs. They travel on the top of my car everywhere I go.
When did you first make a trip with dogs?
Oh, well, goodness. I used to take dogs up to Queensland, you know, and travel with them, take them with me everywhere. But one I can remember, Park. I got him at a little hamlet called Smithfield, about 5 miles the other side of Cairns, as a tiny little brindle pup. And I brought him down in my Jeep. I had the Jeep up there, the Willie's Jeep. And I brought him down to Longwarry. He grew up there. He lived from 1979 to the 27th of June 1993. Never took any notice of any other man in the world. He would obey everything I said to him and do. And I've still got him buried out on the Tarrigo River, 4 miles out of Cairns to the south, and a sign up, Park, the best one-man dog that was ever born. Because I've had other dogs since, but nothing as good as Park.
Tell me about your mother.
My mother?
Yeah.
Well, she was born in 1897 and lived till 98. A German she was. She was born in Australia and so was her mother. And they had a settlement over in South Australia, all these Germans, and that's why I used to ride the bike over there to stay with them.
So you would ride along the old Great Ocean Road?
Yeah, many a time. Sometimes I'd camp out in the bush, but you can't carry too much camping gear on a bike, whereas on the car I have camped everywhere in Australia with the car. I used to love camping out with my dogs in the bush. It was free and easy. You could just stop when you wanted to and travel when you wanted to. Cost you nothing at all.
What would you eat?
Oh, I used to get fast foods. Nothing very healthy, but we used to eat anything. But on the trip from Perth up to Darwin, we used to shoot kangaroos. This fellow that was trying to shoot me, he would shoot the kangaroos. But he was a cruel fella. He'd start carving them up with a cap before the kangaroo was dead. Oh, I used to hate him. Anyway, he was about 10 years older than me. He wouldn't be alive now.
You came back here to Warragul and you became a taxi driver.
Yes. Before that, in 1950, my brother and I bought the Druin Taxi Service. We lived in Druin at a little place there at the top of the town. And brothers don't get on too well all the time, you know. He was married and I was single and I think he was jealous of my girlfriends. So we had a row and this long worry business was for sale, so I went down and bought it in 1952. And from then on I started to prosper. On my own, see? No, didn't have to worry about anybody else. Bought the four blocks. A Mr. Hoare was the bank manager at the bank where I used to bank in Warragul. He lent me the money to buy it without any security at all. Trusted me to buy it.
And banks were different then.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, I prospered from then on. I've been lending money to others ever since.
How long did you keep your taxi business for?
Oh, I drove the taxi for years after I gave the licence in. I couldn't see there was no other taxi there. And they used to come to me, oh, Bill, I've got to go here, I've got to go there. And I kept doing it until they got onto my trail. And so many owed me so much money, because I couldn't claim it, you know, if I didn't have the licence. So even now, I feel like doing a taxi job every now and again, but I don't do it.
You're still driving, it just occurred to me. You're going to be 92 and you're still driving.
With complete confidence. I drive my car and I know who's going to cause an accident coming towards me, even now. So I'm not skiting when I say I've never had an accident and never will.
You've kept on riding the push bike all your life, but you made some big trips for charity, didn't you? There was one in, was it 78?
Yeah, well, in 1978 I was 66, and I rode from Cairns to Brisbane, 2,000 Ks it is, and we raised $20,000 on TV every night. Bill's still going well, although he's 66. Here I am 92 and could still do it.
So the two of you did the ride together?
Oh, and the three of us. They brought a 16-year-old and a 70-year-old up from Brisbane, who used to ride in the races in Brisbane. But they weren't any help to me. One night, when we were staying at a place where they put us up for the night, he gets up on the wardrobe, high up above my bed. That's like about where the wardrobe would be at the top of that door. And here's my bed here, and his bed's there, and the other fella's bed here. And he jumps from there onto my bed and smashes it to smithereens. Now, I couldn't report him because he was in the team, you see. Couldn't do anything about it. But I got the blame for that because that was my bed.
That seems like hard luck when you're doing charity work.
Yeah. And anyway, we raised $20,000 altogether when we got to Brisbane.
And when was your last trip, your last big trip?
4 years ago when Lake Eyre was flooded. You see that old jackaroo out there? I drove that up to Lake Eyre and took all those photographs while I was up there. But I'm itching to go again now. See, I've been home 4 years. I've got notices on my fence down there trying to get somebody in to look after the place while I go.
Tell me about your place. What would they be looking
it
after?
It's a wreckers joint. The council don't like it. But what helps me, the head man in the council is one of my best friends.
Where do you think you're going to go on your next big trip?
Oh, well, there's nowhere to go in Australia. I've been everywhere. But I'll probably go up to Cairns. I've got a daughter living on Magnetic Island. Rosalind.
So you'll stop along the way?
Yeah. I might get rid of her husband while I'm up there. She and I have been keeping him for years. He won't work. He just stands around the house and won't go and get a job anyway. So, Rosie hasn't been very good at choosing a husband.
It's been 10 long years since I left my home in the holler where I was born, where the cool fall nights make the wood smoke rise and the fox hunter blows his horn.
You've been listening to Verbatim on Radio National, and the one and only Bill Skinner. Technical production today was by Judy Rapley. I'm Nicole Steinke. I hope you can join us again at the same time next week for more personal tales from Australia's past in Verbatim.
What have they done to the old home place? Why did they tear it down?